It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well. It's a busy time of the year in terms of Pirate Athletics. So you have a lot going on, and you're about to have the overlap between football and men's basketball in addition to women's hoops.
No doubt about it, and I know we've got two great guests, right?
Yeah, we do. We'll catch up with Rennie Ingolia. He's with ESPN, a UMass Hall of Fame running back, and he's done an excellent job as an analyst with ESPN. He was at Dowdy-Ficklin over the weekend for the USF game, so we'll catch up with him, and we'll talk a variety of topics, and we'll also catch up with Chris Spatola. He's from SiriusXM and also ESPN, and we'll talk college hoops with Chris.
That's right, and I know we'll do a roundtable first, Bubba, for a few minutes before we get to our two great guests waiting for us. And a lot of news. You want to give your thoughts on what's going on in Pirate Nation?
Yeah, obviously this weekend we're going to have number 17, Cincinnati, coming to Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium, 7 p.m. kickoff on the CBS Sports Network. Definitely get your tickets for that. Obviously that crowd against USF for homecoming was very disappointing. We had less for USF on homecoming than we had had for Gardner-Webb and William & Mary. So that was certainly very surprising. But with a nationally ranked team like Cincinnati coming in, hopefully Pirate Nation will respond. So be sure to get your tickets for that. Looking forward to making the trip down on Saturday. On the basketball side of things, it's hard to believe, but as we're recording this, we're a week away from tip-off, opening night next Tuesday, November 5th.
Yep.
VMI will be coming to Williams Arena, Menchie's Coliseum. So definitely, if you have not purchased tickets, go ahead and do that as well. That's what my dad and I, we have our season tickets once again. And I'm sure you probably saw, Dave, they ran a special here in the last several days about Section 113 in the lower bowl. And my dad had we had ordered our tickets in the upper arena as we had a season ago, but when they put that out, we called back down there, and we're going to be down in 113, and that's exciting.
That's really cool. You're one of the Rosenbaums or Blue Bloods of East Carolina Athletics, so you deserve to be there. I'm going to be actually, our seats are not bad. They're at the end zones. They have really good economy plans, by the way, folks. And so I'll be able to take my whole family that way. 1-800-ECU or ecupirates.com to get your tickets.
Yep, no doubt. And one of the things I wanted to mention on the men's basketball front is over the weekend, and the guys traveled up to Winston-Salem, had a close scrimmage, if you will, with Wake Forest. And unfortunately, we lost that game on a last-second half-court shot. But the encouraging news is that we were right there in position to win. Now, I do not know if the game was tied or we were ahead by one or two when Wake hit that half-court shot. But per Steven Igo, Tremont Robinson, who's projected to be our starting point guard, and also Tyree Pig Jackson, who's our backup point guard, those two guys were out in addition to Seth Ledee. So that's the encouraging news, that we had Tristan Newton, the true freshman, and a talented one, but a true freshman at point guard, and a guy that's going to be our third point guard, and we still nearly beat an ACC team. So very encouraging there.
No doubt about it. And by the way, Steven Igo on Hoist the Colors has a great thing he's doing, a different profile for the players. You can learn more about the players. And he's been running a special $1 for the first month. He's been doing that. So check out Hoist the Colors. Just Google it if you're not already. Most of the people, I think, on the podcast already are subscribers to Hoist the Colors. If you're not, do yourself a favor. If you're a big Pirate fan, it'll make you even more of a Pirate fan by learning more. And Igo does a fantastic job. We love him, a friend of the podcast, the very first guest on this podcast, and he's always been very good to us. So appreciate Steven, and I know he listens to us. So I know he's working out right now, listening to us. So appreciate you, Steven, for all that you do.
Yeah, Steven does an excellent job, and if you have not given hoistthecolors.net a look, and definitely check out Steven's work. Keeping with the basketball theme, on the women's hoop front, they'll be tipping off a day after the men, that morning of November the 6th, 11 a.m. tip-off against Middle Tennessee State, a Conference USA opponent. it'll be Education Day. So there'll be several thousand Pitt County and surrounding county students there for that. So I'm sure you'll see probably 5,000 or 6,000, and then that'll be a tremendous, although unusual, environment for the women's basketball team to start the Kim McNeil era.
That's going to be great. And hopefully last year we won on a last second shot, if my memory serves me right. We had Education Day, and that was a really big deal for us. And certainly I know we'll do very well with Kim McNeil. Very exciting brand of basketball she's going to bring to the women's hoops on the hardwood.
No doubt about it. I'm very excited about where that program is going to be headed under Coach McNeil's leadership. Baseball, the regional champions were recognized on Saturday, and they received their championship rings for winning the Greenville Regional, and those look great. If you've not seen them, definitely follow ECU Baseball. That's just at ECU Baseball on Twitter. And you can see those championship rings that Coach Godwin and the guys received on Saturday. Sticking with baseball, the schedule was released.
Right.
So the 2020 schedule is on ecupirates.com. Check that out. The Pirates will be playing 33 games at Clark LeClair Stadium in 2020. Some of those feature the likes. You have non-conference home games. Three-game series with William & Mary, Georgia Southern, Columbia, and Rhode Island. You also have the Keith LeClair Classic. That annual event will be February 28th through March the 1st and features Big Ten foe Indiana, SEC power Ole Miss, and also in-state foe High Point. The Western North Carolina Pirates, they'll have the opportunity to catch the D-Bucks in a three-game series at Charlotte. And then you also have midweek games that feature home and homes with the likes of North Carolina, Campbell, Elon, Old Dominion, and UNC Wilmington. So the usual suspects there in the midweek. I believe we also play Duke, and there's only a single game with the Blue Devils this year, if I'm not mistaken, and that game is in Greenville. And kind of a unique twist, and we had heard about this with UNC Wilmington. I thought it was going to be a weekend three-game series, kind of like the one we played with North Carolina, where we had one in Greenville, one in Chapel Hill, and then one at the Durham Bull Stadium and the DBAP. So we are playing three games against UNC Wilmington, but it's going to be three midweek games, one at Brooks Field, one at Clark LeClair, and then one at Granger Stadium in Kinston. So unfortunately, that was not able to, I don't know, I think it was intended to be a weekend deal, but nonetheless, we are playing the Mark Scathless UNC Wilmington Seahawks three games this coming season. Also, I wanted to mention they'll have the Purple Gold World Series going on here this coming weekend. I do not know the game times, but just like I said, follow at ECU Baseball on Twitter or go to ecupirates.com and you can find that. But that will be taking place November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Clark LeClair. A few other notes. In volleyball, the Pirates are now 15-8, and they are just 3-7 in the American, and they will be in action tonight, Tuesday, October 29th, against North Carolina Central, a team that they beat 3-1 earlier in the season. Women's soccer, they've struggled of late. They've dropped four straight matches. They're 5-10-2 on the year. Prior to this four-game losing streak, they had, I think, gone 2-2, but both of those losses had been in overtime, and then one of those was they also had a 1-1 draw with number 8 Memphis. So they seem to be playing pretty good soccer, but they've struggled, like I said, those last four games. You have our nationally ranked men's swimming and also women's swimming, and those two programs are 5-1 and 6-1 respectively. And the men are ranked in the top 15 nationally, the last I'd seen, and then the women are at least in the top 25, if not the top 20. And both of those programs will return to action here in about 3 weeks when they travel down to Atlanta for an event at Georgia Tech on the 22nd through the 24th of November. And then you have men's golf. Was in action yesterday down in Tampa, and they'll be in action again today as well, or are in action, I should say, and that's at That's at the Intercollegiate at Innisbrook, an event hosted by USF at Palm Harbor, Florida. And then the women's golf, they're finished for the fall, and their last tournament was a little over a week ago up at Louisville in the Cardinal Cup, and they finished 11th out of 17 teams in that event. And then lastly, you have the men's and women's cross-country programs. They are going to be out in Memphis, and they'll be in action Friday morning in the AAC championships in Memphis.
I'll try to get them on here pretty soon to see how things are going. I know there's a national championships coming up too, I think are in sometime in November as well. So we'll keep an eye on that. Bubba, do you want to go to our first guest?
Yeah, let's first chat with Rennie Ingoglia. We had the opportunity to hear from him regarding the Pirates, the American, and also national and college football topics. And let's chat with Rennie right now.
Well, Bubba, it's hard to believe that it's almost November, and happy Halloween to everybody. We got a very special guest with us right now, another great football analyst.
Yeah, we do. We caught up with this guy in the preseason. He does a tremendous job as a color analyst on ESPN, and he was at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium over the weekend. Welcome into the show, Rennie Ingoglia.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Rennie, happy Halloween to you. Hopefully you have a lot of trick and treats this week.
Yeah, same to you guys. Hope it'll be a great week. And I'm with you, man. This football season is flying by. You know, I seem to say it every year, but really this year it just seems like it is going super quick.
Speaking of Halloween, let's start off here. We'll talk about the Pirates in a little bit. But you got a big game Thursday night, don't you? You're going to be in Boone for Halloween, right?
And I'm excited. And it's funny because I've been there a couple times, but the last game I did there was Jerry Moore's last game as head coach. They were still in the FCS, so I haven't been up there in a while. So I'm excited to get up to Boone. Great-looking team. You know, I like Eli Drinkwitz. I did a North Carolina State game last year when he was the OC, so met him. I think that's a tremendous hire for App State. So looking forward to getting up there. And then their defensive coordinator, Ted Roof, actually, we go way back to the early 90s. He used to coach at UMass when I played. So looking forward to seeing him and just watching a really great Sun Belt team and a Sun Belt game, because Georgia Southern now, that's a rivalry, and I actually had them in the Camellia Bowl last year, so I'm familiar with them as well. So should be a good game for Halloween night.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's a game, like Dave said, that we'd like to talk some more about later on when we touch on some other national topics. But starting off with the Pirates, as I said in the open, you were at Dowdy Ficklin over the weekend. Clearly not the result the Pirate fans were looking for, and not the result that most folks expected, be it the odds makers or in the betting public. I mean, most people expected this to be a four-quarter football game, and it was one that was essentially over at halftime. And what was your take on things?
Well, my first take is games like that are the reason I don't gamble, because I'm with you. I mean, I think it was a pick'em game, maybe 1 or 2 points. The line might have moved a little bit. You know, and after Snead returned the opening kickoff, I'm thinking, all right, man, they're going to have some momentum here. And, you know, the biggest takeaway I take out of that game is the interior line play, offensively and defensively. And Mike Houston knows that. He needs to strengthen his team from the inside out. And I think, you know, South Florida just kind of had their way up front, rushing, yeah, you know, at will, really, with them. And then on the other side, you know, ECU could not get any running game going whatsoever. And if you don't run the ball, you become one-dimensional. An athletic defense, like South Florida, is going to get after you. And that's what happened.
In fact, I was walking by. I was just telling the story off air to Rennie. That's exactly what you were saying in the fourth quarter when I was walking by. And I walked by in the press box. I hear a familiar voice. And that's exactly what you were saying on the broadcast. And in the fourth quarter, it was very sad. I tell you what, I mentioned this on our last podcast, Rennie, but we, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, has a term he uses for the Montgomery years. He calls it the most tank. And the most tank was not off that game. I really believe that old habits die hard. And I think that's one of the things when you talk about building a culture, no excuses. The coach would be the first to tell you no excuses. But having said that, when a player is allowed to wear earrings to practice and show up late to practice, and there's all kinds of stuff that was going on the last 3 years, that's what we know about, then it's obvious to figure out why things are. You play like you practice. Coach Houston said in the post game, Rennie, that the guys, he was getting on upperclassmen like juniors and seniors about not tackling well. And look how, and when the game was going on, he said he told them, this is exactly why I was getting on you in practice, because you play like you practice, just like the cliche goes.
Well, I mean, and there's no doubt about it. I mean, as a former player, I can tell you practice is so important. Now, you know, it's weird. You know, I got teenage daughters that play competitive sports, and it is true. I mean, you will play how you practice, and you have to practice hard. And a lot of these kids today, they just don't understand it. And so, you know, Mike Houston said, you know, the issue, he had an issue this year with, you know, if a meeting started at 2:30, you know, you're in your seat at 2:20 ready to go. And he said that he had some kids, players trying to slide in at 2:30 and 10 seconds. And he had to put his strength coach outside locking the door, and he brought him immediately to the field. So there is a lot of bad habits there. And I got a feeling, guys, when January rolls around in Greenville, there's going to be a handful of players on this roster right now that aren't going to be on this roster in the springtime. And that's just the truth of it. That's just the nature of the beast when a new head coach comes in and he wants things done his way and he wants to bring his people up. You know, and the irony is in 2017, I did the opener where Mike Houston brought his JMU team into Greenville and really beat the heck out of ECU up front. And I talked to him about that, and he agreed, you know. And so he's going to have to, you know, and it's cliche, I know, change the culture, but it's the culture that head coach will bring. So whatever, you know, university he goes to, eventually your team has to take the identity, has to take the personality of your head coach. They are nowhere near that now, and it's a work in progress. It surely is.
And we have such a small margin for error, a game like Saturday. I mean, we did have opportunities in that first half, and some of our youth really reared its head. Like, for instance, when the game was tied 7-7 and a very talented but true freshman running back, Demetrius Mooney, gets stripped and just the ball taken away from him down by a grad transfer linebacker in Macon, I guess the 9 or 10 yard line. And then also we had a pick in the red zone. And I think out of at least four red zone trips, we had a 3 points that we had scored out of a potential 28. And with such a small margin for error, that's something you simply can't do.
No, you're right. We actually talked about it after the game. And if you really break it down, how many red zone trips East Carolina had and came up with nothing, and you just can't do it. And Mooney's going to be a very good back, true freshman. You know, I remind people, you know, kid was in high school last year at this time, but you're right. I mean, fundamentals, right? Ball security. And you learn quickly as a young running back that all of a sudden, you know, you're playing college football. You got linebackers that are, you know, as fast as you, if not almost as fast as you, that are very athletic. And everyone tries to strip the ball, and you can't turn the ball over. You know, the other time they had a great play call on third down where they waggled the tight end into the corner. I think it was Watley. If I'm not mistaken, or Lewis, or Lewis, the true freshman. I know it was one of them, but ball hits him in the hands. You got to make that catch. I mean, and the young man knows that. He knows that. But now you're forced to go for it on fourth down. You try to run option to the short side of the field, and South Florida's too fast. You know, you try to go to the boundary. But you had the play. You know, Donnie, you know, a lot of people wanted to get on Donnie Kirkpatrick. He had the right play call on third down. They executed it. They just dropped the ball. And so it's frustrating. And really, if you look at that game and you really pick it apart and dissect it, East Carolina had their opportunities to be in that game the whole way. And as you guys said, it's just miscues that you cannot afford to do when you're trying to kind of rebuild with a new coaching staff.
Sticking with the East Division, this week the Pirates have 17th, 18th ranked Cincinnati, depending on the poll you look at. And the Bearcats are 6-1, 3-0, I believe, and coming off an open week. And then that's what, just a tremendous running attack, and then also one of the league's best defenses for sure. And they sit atop the East Division. So talk a little bit about the Bearcats. I don't know if you've caught any of their games this year. And then also you have UCF, who if anybody thought they were going to go quietly, and most folks didn't, they certainly removed any doubt by going up to Temple and just laying a beat down on the Owls.
Yeah, so I haven't seen Cincinnati in person this year. I saw them a bunch last year. I did their military bowl against Virginia Tech last year. I've watched a decent amount of them. Listen, they're a solid team. Luke Fickell is a good coach. I think in all three phases they're solid. I think Desmond Ritter, their quarterback, you know, I wasn't super sold on him. I thought he was good. He's getting a lot better. He's impressed me from what I've seen this year. And as you said, their defense leads them. I really believe that. And they're just a solid team. And so East Carolina, you've got to play flawless. Now, I live in Orlando, so I see a lot of UCF. I hear a lot about UCF. And it's, believe me, you're 100% right. They were not going to go away quietly. The thing that kills them is obviously they lost to Cincinnati. So Cincinnati has a tiebreaker. So they need the Bearcats to lose twice. But I have seen Temple this year, and Temple plays extremely well at home. And that defense of Temple is very good. So for UCF to go up there and drop 60 on Temple is just, you know, what can you say? They got it going now. And if you really dissect their season, they had a lot of mistakes at Pittsburgh, and it still took a trick play at the end of the game for Pittsburgh to win that game by one, a game that UCF could have easily won. And then on the road at Cincinnati, I think they turned the ball over four times, including the pick six from the young freshman, Dylan Gabriel, and they lose that game by three. So, I mean, they're not even nationally ranked. I mean, if they win those two games, they pull those two games out, UCF's probably like 10th in the nation right now, if not higher. So it's just crazy. So the West has gotten a lot of accolades this year in the American, and rightfully so, but the East is still strong, still a tough conference. You know, I talked to Mike Oresko, who you guys probably know was at that game in Greenville Saturday. So I had a really good conversation with him, and it was funny. We were talking about them getting the waiver and, you know, only 11 teams next year. It'll be one division. Speaking of East and West, that'll be gone, which I think is great for the conference, and all the schools will make a little bit more money. But he was like, you know, if we remove UConn from our conference right now, you know, we would be rated as a total conference higher than the ACC, which he's probably right. I'd have to agree with him, because I know the West of the American is already in a bunch of the ratings. The West is rated higher than the Coastal. So it was just funny talking to him about that. But again, the American is an underrated conference. You know, everyone down here would get mad nationally saying that UCF was disrespected last year. It really wasn't UCF. I thought the conference was disrespected on a whole. So it's great to see all these teams step up. SMU, and then, you know, you knew Memphis was going to be good again this year, and then Cincinnati, and then, of course, as you said, UCF's coming back. So it really is a great conference. I really enjoy calling games in the American Athletic Conference.
And looking down the road for Cincinnati, that's what the Bearcats, like I said, this week they're in Greenville, then they have UConn, if I'm not mistaken, then at USF. So those are games, especially the next two. USF, depending on with it being in Tampa, they're talented enough that maybe something could happen there if Cincinnati's not on its game. But then those final 2 weeks of the season, they have Temple coming to Nippert Stadium, and then also have a trip to Memphis. So I think it's going to probably come down to those final 2 weeks of the season.
I would agree with you 100%. I'm actually just popped open their schedule right now, and you're right. They get Temple at home, but again, Temple is one of those teams where they're good. They just got to, you know, keep everything intact. And then at Memphis, I've done Memphis twice this year, and Mike Norvell, God, you know, it still surprises me that Mike Norvell has not gotten more bites in the Power Five. I mean, I know he's making, I think Memphis ponied up. He's making about $2.7 million this year. He's worth every penny of it, and he brings in a new defensive coordinator, which really, to me, was the key to Memphis. I mean, they've always scored points. They've never had a problem scoring points. Their issue was stopping teams, and really it was UCF that they couldn't stop, and they bring in a new defensive coordinator, and that has really made the difference for them this year, because – they're playing much better on that side of the ball. You know, Chris Ball leaves and takes a head coaching job and has done a nice job. But really, the new look defense for me has been a big difference for them.
Rennie, you've seen East Carolina, and I know that it's not 2020 yet, but just by seeing East Carolina, would you say, is it just the offensive defensive line
What do you see that needs to happen for East Carolina to be playing what we call pirate football?
Yeah, to me, that is the biggest thing. Now, you got to remember, and we talked about it in our broadcast, if you're an East Carolina fan, this will, I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're not going to have a 1,000-yard receiver this year. You know, how many – it's been like 5 or 6 years in a row, right, previously. I think there's been 1,000-yard receivers, the Cardin years, throwing it around. That's not Mike Houston. I mean, he's kind of an old-school, hard-nosed coach. I mean, he'll throw the ball, but – I think if he had his druthers, you're going to be about 50-50. And right now, I think they're probably like maybe 55-45 run over the pass. But with that said, that is the biggest issue. You need to get some stud offensive linemen in here. You need to get some stud defensive linemen in here. You know, skill-wise, I think that, you know, I tell you who I was really impressed with was that C.J. Johnson. I mean,
yeah.
That kid's going to be a special player. I mean, true freshman, he's going about 6'2", 230. Every time he caught the ball, he had yards after the catch. He would just carry people. Prohl's a good, consistent type receiver that you're going to have for a couple years more. Snead is kind of that, like, Wes Welker type, right? It kind of is a pain in the butt. You got Hatfield, another young kid. So I think on the outside, you know, they have talent. Obviously, they're thin at running back, right? We talked about Mooney. We got Trace Christian, who's a kind of a bigger kid, who's actually an Orlando kid. But that's really it. Tay Williams got some carries. I think when they get Penix back, I don't know if they'll get Penix back this year, but and you guys would know better than I would, if he's played in four, if he could possibly redshirt and then save that year and then still have 2 years of eligibility left, because that might be the best bet for him if he can. And then you got to recruit. Listen, and I like Holt Mahlers. You know, I think he needs to work on his accuracy. The coaches talked about that. He's a big, strong kid. And then obviously they have no depth at quarterback because you lose Reed Herring to the transfer portal. So, you know, they need to recruit some more quarterbacks. And Mike Houston told me he's not looking to bring in a lot of JUCOs or grad transfers. He wants to build this thing with his young players. But with that said, I got a feeling after he sits down and kind of evaluates everything, you might see a grad transfer to come in here with maybe a couple JUCOs, but I wouldn't think that many.
Yeah, watch out for a kid named it's a Myrtle Beach area, right, Bubba, in South Carolina, Mason Garcia.
Unless
his grades are bad. He had trouble early in his academic career in high school, but we talked to his quarterback coach in preseason. Looks like that when he committed to us, we talked to him. And it looks like that he's going to be on track, graduating and all that. But Mason Garcia is a name that eventually you'll be calling when you do the games on ESPN. I really feel like he's the future of ECU after Ehlers. And who knows? You never know if there'll be a quarterback controversy next year. You just never know how that's going to play out with quarterback play.
You don't. And then just to stay on the topic, and I'm just browsing through there too deep. You flip it over defensively. Listen, they have a small defensive line, right? Because that fit the scheme that they ran last year. I mean, Kendall Futrell is having a phenomenal season, okay? But he's 230 pounds, and you saw what happened, right? When you go against when you go against a 320-pound tackle that has some athleticism, which both USF guys were pretty good, and then you got Purvis on the other side. Purvis is about the same size, right? And then Alex Turner in the middle is about 290, and he's been playing great. And so you're going to see, I think, them in recruiting, you're going to start getting some 260, 270-pound defensive ends that can run. Because if you don't, and you run into those, 315, 330-pound tackles, and then that one, Donovan Jenkins was only a sophomore for South Florida, 6'5", 330, and he's got a good move, a good kick step back. That kind of, you know, you're talking about 100 pounds bigger than your rough defensive end, you know. And if he gets his hands on you, you're done if you can't beat him with a speed rush.
So that's
the issue they're running into.
Like Livingstone for USF on Saturday, I believe that was his name, and 275 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, 275. And that kid, let me tell you about that kid. I talked with that kid on Friday. He's a biochemistry major he's in grad school, biochemistry grad school, getting his master's in chemistry. He's going to be a physician assistant, and the kid's like a genius. And he was a monster at 275, 280, 6'4 from that rush defense. Because you know, he can speed rush, but he can also stop the run, which you have to do. So it's, you know, I think the blueprint's out there, guys, for Mike Houston. He knows what he needs to do. I mean, he had some big, strong defensive line at JMU, and they were pretty damn good. So he knows what to do, and that's why when you hire a new coach, right, you always say you got to give him 3 years. Listen, Scotty Montgomery had 3 years, right? I think that was fair. You got to give him three, because then at least with three, they'll be playing with guys that they've recruited for a couple of years. So I think three is the magic number. If at 3 years you don't see market improvement, and I'm not saying you're going to win 10 games in your third year, but if you're not winning 6-7 games, you know, going to a bowl game, I think with the money these coaches make, right, I think that's the issue, right? That's the problem. So I think three is the magic number. So we'll see what happens.
Randy, getting back to the West Division of the American, you touched on Memphis and the tremendous job that Mike Norvell is doing there. Taking a look at SMU and Sonny Dykes, 8-0, 4-0 in the league. They're ranked 14th this week, at least in one poll. And so talk a little bit about the Mustangs, because that's the team that the Pirates will see right after Cincinnati.
Yeah, they surprised me, and I tweeted that out, and immediately their offensive coordinator, Rhett Lashley, said, well, you're not surprised anymore. He tweeted me right back. I mean, they were 5-7 last year. You know, if they would have went 8-4, right, that's a market improvement, right? Or 9-3, that's going to be great. I mean, they're on pace here possibly to run the table. But, I mean, obviously this Memphis one is huge, right? But they were a surprise for me. The quarterback play, right? You bring in Shane Buechele, right, a transfer quarterback, and that's a major position. And, again, they had skill players on the outside, good running backs, and then all of a sudden you're playing some good defense, and that's what happens. I mean, you're competing for the conference. And so, you know, good for them. And that's a great location. I mean, Dallas, Texas is a great place, great recruiting. And I think Sonny Dykes has done it. I don't know right offhand the numbers, but he's brought in some grad transfers and some regular transfers, and it's paid dividends. So they're doing great, and that's going to be – I mean, listen, I think it was today. Game day is going to be there for that Memphis SMU game. So that is phenomenal, and that's an ABC game. So two ranked teams in the American going at it with game day there. Can't wait.
And another team that I wanted to ask you about, and it's a team that I've been saying on the podcast – don't forget about them. Don't forget about them, because you hear so much talk about SMU and Memphis, and rightfully so. But Navy midshipmen, they're right there. They're 4-1, and they had that loss at Memphis where they had a good first half and a terrible second half. But they have SMU coming to them here in a couple weeks or so.
Yeah, I mean, so when you look at Navy, it boggles my mind that they were 3-10 last year. It's crazy. So, but Kenny Amatololo, He revamped his coaching staff. He's another one, brought in a new defensive coordinator, brought in, seven new assistant coaches. And they got back, and they're playing Navy football, right? It's exactly what they're doing. I mean, they can always run the ball, but their defense is playing really well. I mean, they play Connecticut Friday. I feel bad for Randy Etzel and UConn, because they're probably going to put 50 or 60 up on them, because they're not going to be able to stop that running game. They go to Notre Dame. I mean, watch out, Notre Dame, if you're a Notre Dame fan, because I think Navy can get and will get Notre Dame November 16th, and then SMU, the big one you talked about. So, yeah, Navy's got it all right in front of them as well. And talking to Ken Niumatalolo, too, about that Memphis one, he thought that slipped away. They had some miscues, as you just talked about. That was a game they could have easily won. But, yeah, as I look at Navy's schedule, they're a team that's going to be a tough out the rest of the way. I mean, they could go – I really do think they could beat Notre Dame, and I think there's a team – Army is not Army of last year. So Navy's a team that goes 11-1, I think, or 10-2. So, yeah, another great team out of the American Athletic Conference.
So, something else along the lines of with those two teams, SMU and Cincinnati, who are ranked 14th and 17th or so right now in the polls. obviously the first college football playoff poll hasn't been released yet, but I would imagine they'll be somewhere fairly close to there, but who knows. And then you have App State, who you're going to be seeing on Thursday. The Mountaineers are ranked 20th in both polls, and they do have a game left at South Carolina. Do you think if App State runs the table, and let's say obviously you have Cincinnati, who's ranked three spots ahead of them right now, what do you see App State's fate being if they find a way to win a game at South Carolina and run the table?
So this is fascinating to me. So I cannot wait to see what the College Football Playoff Committee does, okay? Because as long as they keep App State ahead of Boise, okay, Boise's not going to have a marquee win behind App State. That's going to jump them, in my opinion. If App State goes to South Carolina and wins and then runs the table in the Sun Belt, which I believe they will in the Sun Belt, they're just going to move up. So the key for App State is, what does the American do? Does the American beat each other, right? Does whoever makes it to the championship game, does App State have a chance to jump one of those teams? Now, we're too far out right now, but I say they do, right? If the American, if a couple of those teams, like we talked about Cincinnati, right? If they stumble coming down the stretch, let's say Cincinnati struggles coming down the stretch, not struggles, but loses one of those games we talked about down the stretch, right? But they still own the head-to-head with UCF. So let's say they go, and they have two losses. But then they upset, let's say, SMU on the West or Memphis on the West. How does an App State team, undefeated with a win on the road at a SEC team, how do they not jump the American team? So to me, it's fascinating. But again, it's all up to the College Football Playoff Committee. So we'll see. That first ranking is so important by that committee. So we'll see how much it mirrors, how closely it reflects what the AP voters are doing right now. So to me, that's just, if you're a Group of Five fan, to me it's fascinating. And yeah, I do believe App State definitely has a chance to go to the New Year's Six Bowl game. I do. So I can't wait to see how this thing plays out.
Nationally, some games that I wanted to discuss with you before we wrap this thing up. You have the LSU-Bama game coming up in Tuscaloosa here in the next couple weeks. You also will have Ohio State-Penn State in the next few weeks. You also have Florida and Georgia taking
Georgia, yeah.
that game in Jacksonville. And so you have those. And then you also have a team like Minnesota that's kind of flying under the radar a bit, even though they're 8-0. So talk a little bit about some of those games and how you see things nationally.
Yeah, that's why I love college football, because once we get into November, we get the greatest matchups. So, I do a ranking every week, and so I'm going to switch mine. It's my college football predictor, and I don't do a predictor what I think is going to be the end all at the end. I give my rankings by what I see right now. So this week, to me, LSU is the best team in the country, best resume in the country. Second best team in the country, I think, is Ohio State, based on their resume and what they've done right now. Then I'd go Bama, then I'd go Clemson, and then, Oklahoma lost, so then I go Penn State. And then I'm gonna put Florida in there at the sixth spot. But of course, as you just talked about, it's gonna all work its way out. To me, the Bama LSU game all dependent on Tua Tagovailoa. Is he gonna be? He's gonna be back. I mean, he had the tightrope surgery. He's gonna be back. But how effective is he? I just don't think they can beat LSU with Mac Jones. And the reason why is I think the Alabama defense is dominant. I don't think it's the dominant defense that we're used to seeing of Alabama teams of past. But I think it's still going to be a great game. But I think if Tua's back, I think that game comes down to the wire, and it's kind of a pick 'em. But that's going to be a great one to watch. Ohio State, Penn State, again, man, I like Penn State. Again, I'm a big fan of James Franklin. I love what they're doing. They may have the most under – we talked about defensive lines, right, defensive fronts. What ECU has to do. Penn State's got a great one. So it's definitely one of the top three in the nation, and it kind of goes under the radar. So that's going to be a great matchup when they go against Ohio State. And I think really that's the key. Can that defensive front of Penn State kind of contain Justin Fields in what Ohio State's doing. The Florida-Georgia game, to me, if Kyle Trask just, you know, keeps getting better, which he does, I like Florida in that game. Now, I saw Florida in person, and the key is to them is they got a lot of guys back healthy. But, of course, you know, you go to that neutral site, you never know. But if Florida wins that game, boy, they're right in it, right, coming in down the stretch because – their only loss is going to be to LSU, and so that's going to be a great game as well. And then what was the other one? And then you talked about Minnesota. That's going to work itself out. That's why I love it, because all those games you just gave me, it's all going to work itself out because they're all going to play each other. So
yeah.
We get to sit back and watch it and see what happens. So this is going to be a great stretch run here as we approach November.
Yeah, and like you're saying, with Minnesota, as far as it working itself out, they have an off week this week, and then they have Penn State coming to Minneapolis. And then I know down the stretch, obviously, they had that game, the final game of the regular season with Wisconsin. And they also have another ranked team mixed in there. So it's an extremely challenging November for P.J. Fleck and company.
No, you're right. They go Penn State at home, and so you're going to know right away if they're for real, right, when Penn State comes to town. They go to Iowa. You know, I don't care what Iowa's record is at the time. That's a tough place to play on the road. They go to Northwestern, who's having a really down year, and then they get Wisconsin at home. So you're gonna know what the Golden Gophers are for real those last four games of the season.
Absolutely. Well, Rennie, we really appreciate your time. You've been very generous, and we greatly appreciate it. We'd love to catch up with you as the postseason's rolling around, and best of luck to you on the call this Thursday up in Boone as you're calling App State and Georgia Southern, and we'll certainly be tuned in, and safe travels.
I enjoyed it, guys. Anytime, give me a call. I love talking football. Great stuff.
Thank you very much, Rennie. Rennie is actually, for people that don't know, his day job is he's a cop. He's a detective at Orlando, so keeping Mickey Mouse and everybody at Disney World safe and all the surrounding, I guess, Orlando Magic and everybody around that area. So appreciate Rennie. Fantastic guy. Love a straight-up guy. Love that about him. He'll tell you what he thinks, and I appreciate that wholeheartedly about Rennie. Mucho respect for him for his analysis on the Pirates and whatever game he's calling. He's got that big game again coming up Thursday night with App State. Should be a fantastic game. And Boone.
Yeah, it really should be. App State certainly rolling. I believe they've won 13 in a row now, which is like the second or third longest winning streak nationally, going back to the games they won at the end of last season. So Elijah Drinkwitz has certainly picked up where Scott Satterfield left off. Doing it a little bit differently, but they're playing excellent football.
No question about it. I know we're talking football. Do you want to talk some basketball with our next guest?
Yeah, now let's go to that conversation we had a few days ago with Chris Spatola, a guy, interesting note about Chris, and I think you may have referenced it in the interview, as he is, I believe, he's the son-in-law of Duke head men's basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski.
He was on the staff for a while and his basketball operations and different things behind the scenes, and did a nice job inside Duke basketball with Coach K. He used to be on the show and do like lots of nice segments there. He's married to Jamie. That's Coach K's actually the third daughter, the baby, if you will, of the family, and he's married to Jamie. Let's go to Chris Spatola right now.
Well, Bubba, we have a basketball preview, as we've been doing over the last week or so, and with us right now, one of our favorite guests is back, and it's hard to believe college basketball season is just a couple weeks away.
Yeah, we caught up with him last season. You can hear him on SiriusXM, also on ESPN. Chris Spatola. Chris, welcome into the show.
Fellas, it's good to be back with you, man. It must be that time of year.
It is, Chris. Very excited. A lot of storylines I know out today. Saw that the AP poll, Michigan State number one. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about, and we'll try to – I know you're a very busy man. We'll try to value your time. What were your thoughts on Michigan State? And it looks like a lot of people are having them high up there, one or two. So I guess Tom Izzo is a great coach, so no surprise there.
Yeah, he's a great coach, and they probably have, I think, at least as we sit here today, probably the best returning college player, which helps. I mean, it's become such a transient sport now in college basketball that, and there's so much unknown about, you know, what the impact transfers are going to have or the impact that new freshmen are going to have, that a lot of times I think we gravitate towards the teams that are returning a lot of guys and guys who have a junior or a senior next to their name. So, I think Michigan State is deservingly number one right now. Again, they return Cassius Winston. They've got some really good guys up front. And as you said, that with Tom Izzo, it's hard to doubt them being good. And their schedule is really good. Again, I mean, their schedule is really tough. So it's hard to say that they're not at least at the start of the year the number one team in the country.
I know in this usual suspects up there, I saw with, I think it's Kentucky and Kansas and Duke in there. So it's a lot of the blue bloods, no surprise. But I guess that's the way it is with the preseason poll. We actually had one question for you locally for us with East Carolina with Joe Dooley. He has a – it's hard to believe, but I want to ask you this question because you're the basketball expert and not us, even though I love the game. We have 11 new faces on the East Carolina program this year, 11 new guys on the roster out of 13. Have you ever seen a transformation of a team where it's, I'd use the term, it's overused, rebuild, but it just seems like that's the most I've ever heard of in one season?
No, you know, it's funny you bring that up. I was working the AAC media day, and I got a chance to talk to Joe, who I really respect as a coach. I think he does. I mean, he was an outstanding assistant coach. What he did at Florida Gulf Coast, I mean, he had 520-win seasons in his 5 years at FGCU. I mean, that's how – now, look, he took over a good program, but that's what he's come from. And, of course, he was at Kansas before that. You know, the 11 newcomers it says two things. One, it says that program needed to be gutted and new blood needed to be reinserted into it. And then the second thing is it shows you how quickly you can turn over a roster in college basketball. Like, he goes out, he gets Seth DeLay, who's a redshirt senior, a guy that missed a couple games last year at the end of the year because he tore his ACL. Joe said that he's fine. He's going to be healthy, ready to go at some point this year early. And then, they return Jaden Gardner, but that's it. Like, those are their only two players. So, I don't think they're going to be competing this year in the AAC, but again, I respect the job that Joe can do. And you never know in this day and age with bringing in 11 new guys, you really never know who's going to produce and what the outcome's ultimately going to be.
And he told us, Chris, by the way, back in the last season, one of the games, I can't remember exactly what game, it seems like all the games run together, as you know, when you do games. But it was one of the post-game press conferences. He said, guys, I wouldn't have come here if I didn't think I could win. So that was even before all the new guys. And I would just respect the fact we didn't have American talent last year, but we were competitive because of Joe's game plan. Obviously, all the great coaches he has, and then the guys were just playing so hard. The effort and attention to detail on defense it kept us in games we probably shouldn't have been, including an upset win over Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, again, yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. That speaks to Joe, and it's a tough conference. You know, UConn leaving is a hit to it. There's no doubt about that, but. You know, Houston and Cincinnati are always going to be able to be old. They're always going to throw guys into those programs. You know, Temple is always a new head coach, but is always going to be competitive. Johnny's going to always have a team down at UCF. Wichita, I mean, you're talking about, and obviously Memphis with what they've done recruiting. I mean, you're talking about a conference that, outside of the Power Six, is A, the quality of coaches. Like, that was the other thing. I was talking to Joe with that media day. Like, you go down the list, the roster of coaches in the AAC. It's pretty crazy. You know how big a names and how accomplished these guys are. So it's a competitive league. I don't know if financially ECU is quite on par with some of these other schools, but they've hired the right guy. And I agree. I think it's a place that Joe will be able to sell.
As far as one of the questions I had too for you, the guys teasing the podcast because I have the praises. I really love Penny Hardaway. I love what he's doing in Memphis. I know there's been a lot of it's interesting because the the beginning of the, like, you know, you see, hear about the number one recruiting class over a team that you know very well, the Duke Blue Devils, but then it seems like there's some tempering. There's some guys that went out on the limb, some basketball guys that all of a sudden now I'm hearing, you know, well, maybe it's not as good of a, but I really believe in Penny Hardaway and what he's doing in Memphis, and I think that that's, I was going to get your thought on this. He hasn't proven himself yet, obviously, only his second year, but I think it's like the new Kentucky. It's a brand of basketball that he's going to do. You've got local guys there, and just, you don't even have a gas tank away. You could walk down the street and have great guys at Memphis. I just want to get your thoughts on Memphis and the American.
Yeah, I mean, I think, one, you know, they fit the profile of, I think, what's attractive to young guys now. I mean, you've got, it's not just Penny who's the head coach, but Mike Miller, who's an assistant. Like, they have there's a pro vibe. They play in a pro arena. I think that the city of Memphis is underrated in terms of the talent it produces. Like, a lot of these guys that he's getting are just local guys. And that's part of the problem that I think Josh Pastner and then ultimately Tubby Smith had, is they couldn't get the local buy-in. But there's talent in that city. And then, you know, Penny Hardaway being the head coach at the local school is a big hit. I mean, it's, you know, I think they're going to be good. You know, getting to 22 wins last year, I think is what they ended up with, was a pretty, it's a pretty remarkable feat, because they were playing a lot of different guys, and they were really, at times they were really wild, and part of it was Penny wanted to, you know, make his style a part of the national conversation, and he knew what was coming in. And look, you know, the problem, the blessing and the curse is you get a James Wiseman and a Precious Achiuwa, and you have those guys, but you have them for a year. So, like, you got to get this thing done. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know if they're necessarily that good to win big, but I'm okay if they're the favorites in the AAC. I still like Houston. I still like Cincinnati. I think those teams are going to be very good and tough to beat. But there's no question that from a ceiling talent standpoint, Memphis has the best right now.
Chris, what do you think about the hire that Cincinnati made with John Brannon? He's a guy that had tremendous success at NKU, a program that had not been in Division I all that long after having some success at the Division II level. And so I thought it was a nice hire. Not only had he had that success, but he's a guy that had a background in that area prior to NKU.
No, I think it's a great hire. Yeah, I mean, just go back and look at the job that John Brannon did at Northern Kentucky. I mean, they've been competitive and all of that. Now, it's going to be different. Like, it's, you know, Mick Cronin had his way of playing and his style, and it's going to be a lot different than John Brannon. I think they're going to need shooting. Like, that's part of the John Brannon style. They're going to have to figure out who's going to make perimeter shots for them. But here's the thing, guys. Like, when you return the player of the year in a conference, in this day and age in college basketball, which Cincinnati's doing in Jaron Cumberland, I mean, he was a unanimous first-team all AAC selection, honorable mention All-American. He averages almost 20 points a game. Like, in this day and age, to bring back a player of that caliber is a great starting place. So I think they're going to be good. Look, this is a team that won 28 games last year. So I think they're going to be very good again, and they return their best player from that team. And there's not a huge drop-off, I think, in coaching. Now, getting those guys again to morph into the system that John Brannon wants to play, I think is going to be the hurdle early. But ultimately, home run hire, and I think they're going to have a very good year.
And Chris, I wanted to ask you about the moving, if we can, to quickly through the ACC. A guy you know very well, Coach Mike Krzyzewski. It's just hard to believe his 40th season this year. One question I have is, do you think that he, with nowadays, do you think there's going to be a coach ever like him again, where there's going to be a guy that can stay at one job for 40 years?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's going to be very rare. And I'll be honest with you, I think where we'll see it much, much more, and it currently exists. You know, there have been guys at lower level programs, and I don't mean that as a pejorative. I mean that just in terms of, you know, low major, mid major. I think we're going to see it a lot more there, because there are certain coaches who they don't want that big gig, you know, like they're comfortable being where they are, quality of life and all that, and they can win games and maybe get to the tournament. I think we'll see a lot more there. 40 years at a place like Duke is, it's crazy. I mean, it really is. And so I, you know, to answer your question, that we maybe, like maybe Tony Bennett loves Virginia so much and he's so comfortable and the air, you know, maybe a guy like that ends up staying at Virginia for a long time, but it will definitely be the exception to more than the norm. It will be the exception to the rule.
Well, to give you an idea how long Coach K has been there, there was a very first time I ran into Coach was living in Durham as a kid, and I'm 7 years old, and my grandparents say, hey, go get some more ketchup. I walk up to the counter, and there's a young Mike Krzyzewski in 1980. He had barely been the coach. He had been hired as a coach, and I'm 7 years old, and my next birthday I'll be 47. So that's how long he's been a coach at Duke University. It's just hard. It's hard to believe. But let's talk some ACC. What do you? What teams do you like? I know the Blue Devils are going to be good. And North Carolina, is it the usual suspects again this year?
Yeah, I mean, their talent level is the highest. So you know, again, I hate to keep, you know, chiming this bell, but in this day and age in college basketball, to come in with the highest level of talent is big. And now the question is, how quickly can that talent mature? I was a little bit surprised that Duke was picked the preseason favorite in the league. I think they've got a lot further to go. High ceiling, high talent, but I think they're Duke right now is a lot younger, and I don't mean by age, because obviously Duke has been young for a few years now, but I just mean in terms of how they play. Like, they don't have a Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, which you could tell me those guys were freshmen all you want. I mean, it's hard to believe based on how they carry themselves and how they played. What I've seen so far, Duke's a lot younger and plays a lot younger than they have. So I think their road is a lot longer. It's not to say they can't be good. I think they will. I love North Carolina. I think, you know, they're obviously Cole Anthony and they're young again at that position, but I love their athleticism, their length. I think they have a chance to be really, really talented up front and different. I think Virginia's going to be good. I mean, look, they bring back guys from a national championship winning team. I think Braxton Key's ready to take a big step. Their system and their style is always going to win them games just based off of that. I do think Louisville is going to be good. Again, I'm not as high on them as some other folks are. I think some of it, again, it gets back to we fall in love with teams that we recognize the names coming back. But you know, look, I think this league is always going to be competitive. I think the question of how good this league is going to be is, like, how good is a Syracuse this year? Like, is Elijah Hughes going to be that guy? Is – you know, who's going to make the jump from that bottom of the ACC? Is Pitt better? I think Georgia Tech is going to be better, even though they can't play in the tournament and they're not going to be in the ACC. I think they're going to be better. I think Notre Dame is going to be significantly better than they were last year. Florida State kind of going to be who they've been. They lose a lot of guys, but they'll replenish. And so, you know, look, the league is – I think it's going to have its tiers again. I think you're going to have the talented teams at the top. I think you'll have a middle group like the Notre Dames, Florida States, perhaps the Syracuses. And then, you know, we'll see what BC ends up being and some of these other teams that have been at the bottom. But I think those teams at the top have a chance. It's less unknown than last year, but I still think they have a chance to be very good.
Chris, in the SEC, obviously clubs like Kentucky and Florida are going to come to mind, but I wanted to ask you, Georgia, Tom Crean, obviously only won 11 ball games year one. How much improvement do you see for the Bulldogs, and how do you see things panning out in Athens?
Yeah, you know, he's. I mean, to get the recruiting talent that he got is big. I mean, Anthony Edwards, who's, you know, going to be his stud freshman, I think is a big part, and that's what Tom can do. You know, he can go out and he's going to get those stud talents, and I think Edwards is he's going to be one of the best. He's certainly one of the best freshmen. He's going to be one of the best players in the SEC. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the question is, how does that talent form around it? I mean, Michael Peake, they got another freshman guard Xavier Wheeler, who you know, who's I think has a chance to be pretty good. But you know, it's again, it's a league, the SEC, akin to the ACC, where you're talking about teams at the top that just have a talent ceiling that is a lot higher. And we may not be able to sit here in October and say, well, this is what this team is going to look like, but you know, ultimately, you know that those teams are going to be good. So, for example, a Kentucky or I think LSU, you know, again, whatever you think of that situation, Will Wade, I think they're going to be good again. So it's at the top, I think the SEC has a chance to be really good.
It's interesting that you said LSU, because they really have had the last real great teams I can remember is with Dale Brown and Shaquille O'Neal in the early 90s. Where they're really good, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of – I mean, I was doing games on the SEC Network at the end of the Johnny Jones era, and I'd walk into the Pete Maravich Center and there in Baton Rouge and be like, are we really at LSU? I mean, it had really fallen off.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, they lost some guys to the NBA, but, you know, to return a Javonte Smart and a Skylar Mays and an Emmett Williams, I mean, I'm doing them – I've got their game against VCU at VCU here in November, which I think is going to be a great game. It's going to say a lot about both teams. But I'm curious to see what LSU, how it sort of, you know, how it kind of reinvents itself after Tremont Waters and some of the other talent that they lost. But I think they have a chance, again, athletically, from a talent perspective, I think they still have a chance to be really good.
I was going to ask you about their other leagues. So they're, I know the Big Ten comes to mind. Are there are teams there that you're looking? We talked about Michigan State right at the top of the interview. Are there other teams? Michigan, I know, is probably going to be good. What other teams in the Big Ten are going to be good this year?
I mean, I think Maryland is going to be really, really good. And the fact that they got, you know, Anthony Cowan and Jalen Smith back, I think catapults them. You know, they're right there behind Michigan State. Again, like, until these teams go out and do it and actually stamp their foot, you know, as the best team, you kind of have to wait and see. But I think Maryland has an opportunity to be really good. I think Ohio State, again, they returned Caleb Wesson, and it's a chance for them to, you know, to return, I think, some guys from last year. And I think Chris Holtman is a really good coach, done a good job there. Purdue, you know, I still think, even with losing Carson Edwards, I think there's still some DNA left over from that team that was really good last year. Michigan is going to do what they do. I'm going to get a chance to see them down at the Battle for Atlantis, and which is a really competitive tournament, by the way. But I can't wait to see them and kind of what the Juwan Howard era is going to look like there. Illinois, a team that we really haven't heard a lot about of recent vintage. But I think they have a chance to be pretty good. So, I'm worried about the bottom of the Big Ten. I don't know, you know, a lot like the ACC, I think the bottom can be really bad. But I think you go to the top five teams, six teams in the Big Ten, I think it's going to be a strong conference.
Chris, I want to ask you some of those bracket buster type teams. Teams like Davidson, that's a team I have an opportunity to see play a lot. I'm about 20 miles from there. So who are some clubs, whether it's Davidson, VCU, Creighton, St. Mary's, teams like that you could see making a run this year in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head on a couple of them. I mean, I'll talk VCU first. I mean, they returned seven of their top eight scorers from last year. I mean, look, it's a program that's perennially good, but I think they have a chance to be really good again. And again, I'm doing that game on November 13th, them against LSU. And I think, you know, if they win that game, which I think they probably can, you know, I think we're looking at a team that can make a run. I think Creighton is another good call, even though they're out of the Big East. I think, you know, they return Tyshawn Alexander, who is one of the most explosive scorers that you'll see in that conference, who is also, I think, is really, really good. So, you know, it's some of these other conferences, part of it is like, okay, whose age manifests? Like, for example, I think I think Harvard is going to be really good. Like, I think Tommy, he brings back Bryce Aiken and Seth Towns. And, like, I think Harvard is not only going to win the Ivy League. I think they have a chance based on the talent and then the age that they're bringing back. I think Harvard's going to have a chance to be really good. So it's a fun time of year. You know, you get a lot of these tournaments that, you know, where some of these young, these non-Power 5, Power 6 conferences get to infiltrate and make your mark. And I think we'll learn a lot about those types of teams early in the year.
Chris, one of the questions we had was something back in June that happened with the rule changes. Want to get your comments on that. I know you're very passionate like I am and Bubba as well about the rules. And we'll start off. I know, Bubba, you wanted to mention about the three-point line, right?
Yeah, I did. And that's what three-point line, obviously, a little over, I guess, what, 11, 12 years ago now. That's what you had, the move from 19-9 to 29, and now it's 22, 1 3/4. So where the international mark is, and how do you see that impacting things as far as the way teams choose to play and then opening up the lane and so forth?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I've asked a lot of coaches at these media days about that. And there's two things. First of all, I don't think there's going to be any discernible difference. There certainly won't be in attempts. Like, teams are going to take the same number of shots. We're talking about 15 inches, you know what I mean? We're not going to see any discernible difference in attempts. I think you'll see percentages maybe tick down a little bit. But, again, it's not a – guys are shooting deep anyway. I think the spacing, it will improve spacing just a little bit. But I think that's big. The other thing I've heard from these guys, and it was interesting, when I walked into the first gym that I saw had the new line in it, the corners, what coaches have found is that the corners have created a lot of turnovers in that guys have had a hard time place because the line is closer to the – they didn't widen the court. So the sideline is still the same width. They just moved the line in the corner closer to the sideline. And so what a lot of coaches have found is that guys are stepping out of bounds. As they prep their shot, a lot of guys are stepping out of bounds as they catch or into their shot. So it's an adjustment. I think folks should keep an eye on that. The other thing I would add, guys, as an editorial, and this is I'm going to say this a lot on the air this year, like we have to have 1 3-point line. So the women have to, you know, they made the adjustment, but it was almost like they were kind of, they wanted to take their time. You know, they didn't want to go at the men's timeline, which is fine. But we have to get to a place where we have 1 3-point line. Like, we're going to have another season. And we got to that for a couple of years. We're going to have another season here where we have 2 3-point lines. You go into some of these NBA arenas, and, you know, like, let's get to a uniform 3-point line here. I mean, that's my only thing. Like, either the women come back and let's get one college line for men and women. And let's move on from there. It's, you know, we're going to have another season where we got two different lines, and it's a little annoying to me.
Chris, also the second change I saw, a major change as far as the rules this year, and help me understand this. So with a shot clock is basically you have a 30-second shot clock, but if a team gets a rebound, an offensive rebound, it'll just go back to 20 seconds. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, you hit it right on the head. Yeah, which is a great rule. I mean, it's, you know, the NBA has rules similar. It's, you know, it's basically taking out the 10 seconds that you would have to cross the timeline. And, you know, they're basically saying, let's get a shot up more quickly. So it's, you know, speed, it's to increase speed of play, get more shots up. And yeah, you hit it right on the head. Shot goes up, it's missed. The team that gets the offensive rebound would get 20 seconds instead of it going back to 30.
Something else, I talked about how the three-point line went back to the international distance. I guess it's about 4 years ago now, and the women's game went to playing quarters rather than halves. Do you see that in the future in the men's game?
Yeah, I do. You know, again, like, this game of basketball should have uniform standards and rules. And,
right.
And so, like, that being one of them, how you have a major sport in a major level of your game, your sport, playing a different timing system and quarter system, that's so bizarre to me. Like, you know, it'd be like if the MLS was playing 4 quarters instead of 2 halves, or, you know, make your own analogy. It's so bizarre to me. Like, we need to have, look, rules are gonna differ, I get it, But we should have the same timing. And I think the aesthetically, I think the four-quarter game is better. I think the games will be faster, even though folks will tell you that perhaps it's not that big of a difference. I do think the games are faster. Anyway, there's a whole host of reasons. But the biggest reason is we should have the same timing system in all levels, high school, international, college, NBA. The times may differ. You know, like an NBA game may be longer than international or college, but we should have a quarter system across the board. Women, men, international, NBA, four quarters. We got to do that.
One of the questions I had also, another rule change I saw was certainly that I've been upset about. I think it's a tweak to it anyway, where coaches now, if a live ball is happening, a coach can call a timeout. Now, instead of before, it was just the players on the court.
Yeah.
But now we can have where the coaches is under. Is it under 2 minutes left in regulation? Is that what it is? I know there's a stipulation there. It's not all across the board.
No, it is. And part of that is, coaches complained like it, and I understand the complaint, having lived in that world. I mean, I get it, so coaches can do it, and it's probably the right tweak. I mean, at that point in a game, a coach should have the power to be able to call the timeout when they want instead of having to communicate to the floor. My thing is, I still think we need to dial back the number of timeouts the coaches get. Because I think the game, again, speed up the games. I think, you know, practice is a time to coach your team, not necessarily timeouts in a game. But it was coaches complained about it. They wanted the power to be able to do that at the end of the games, and it's probably the right thing to do.
Chris, I want to ask you a question concerning individual players. Guys, when we talked about some teams that could potentially fly under the radar a bit, compared to your household names like Duke and Kentucky and so forth, but taking a look at some individuals, I referenced Davidson earlier, had the opportunity to see the Atlantic 10 Player of the Year multiple times a year ago, John Axel Goodmanson. They also have Kellen Grady, a couple of tremendous guards. That's what Goodmanson was, I think, 17-7 and then 5 assists. So just an awful lot of fun to watch him play. Who are some other guys around the country that you think folks need to take the opportunity to watch if they get a chance?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Again, I know a lot of these names are probably going to be familiar, but, I mentioned Jaron Cumberland at Cincinnati. Who else would be a good Miles Powell, if you haven't seen him at Seton Hall. He's an outstanding player. Isaiah Stewart from Washington. I think Washington's going to have another good year. Isaiah Stewart would be a guy that I would bring up. Lamar Stevens at Penn State is a guy that I was going through a list the other day that people need to check out. Sam Merrill at Utah State. I don't know how many people watch Utah State games, but this kid Sam Merrill had a great year last year. I think he's going to have another good year. So those would be a few I'd throw in. The Davidson guys, I'll tell you what, Kellen Grady, I love how he plays. And they, you know, they missed him last year a little bit. He's so good, and he's so smooth and so talented. And Axel Goodmanson, like you mentioned, had a great year. So there's a lot of dudes, but you can't go wrong with those two guys at Davidson.
Chris, I had a question as far as the game itself in America. Disappointed. I was telling Bubba earlier at lunchtime when we were talking, getting ready, prepping for the interview with you. Disappointed this year that the Americans were not even in the finals for the what they call now, I guess, it's the World Cup. I'm an old dog, trying to learn new tricks here. It used to be, I guess, the World Championships. I understand the other teams are, as far as around the country, world rather, are getting better. But what do we have to do to get the brand basketball back to where we're dominating again?
Get the best players playing. I mean, let's be honest. Ultimately, the gap has closed, like you just said, between international basketball and the U.S. The gap's closed. And look, I lived it. I mean, I was there in Beijing in 2008. Where I don't think people realize if Kobe Bryant doesn't kind of go on his own little personal run in the fourth quarter there and hit a couple big time shots, like we might lose that game. Same thing in 2012. Like, there were competitive games in those Olympics. And that's with the best players.
Right.
So you got to get the best players playing. Let's not forget, like, the reigning MVP in the NBA is from Greece. He's an international player. You know what I mean? So, look, it is a slight to those guys who went over and represented the U.S., but they're not the best. And so the point is, the world has gotten so good that the U.S. is still the best in basketball, but you got to send your best players. It's not a day and age where, even 5 years ago, where we could send second line guys and expect to win that thing. Like, the world has gotten too good. And unless we send our best, which, you know, my hope is that will happen in these upcoming Olympics, but we got to send our best players, and those best players have to buy in and have to want to be a part of that process.
Chris, one of the things I know about you is you're the camp director for the USBA, and you've got different camps going around. Can you plug that a little bit? Can you, for people listening right now, can you, that maybe have kids or grandkids around the country listening, that maybe there's different camps going around right now?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking, man. Yeah, I do it with Bobby Kremins. The best part about it is I get to do it with Kremins, and I get to do it with Dave Odom, two legends in the ACC, two good guys. And, you know, we run high school tournaments during the summer, the national championships in Raleigh, North Carolina, every year. So any AAU programs or upstart programs who want to compete in a national tournament should definitely get involved with that. And you just go on the website, usba.com, and we run a whole bunch of clinics. Just got back from Puerto Rico, a good weekend down there. Run a whole bunch of clinics throughout the year in different parts of the country. And so, yeah, folks should check it out. It's good stuff, man. And again, you get to learn from I'm low man on the totem pole, but you get to learn from greats like Kremins and Odom and some other good guys. So I appreciate you asking. It's a good time.
Is there I know that you said on the website an age limit. I saw there earlier, is that a certain – I'm selfishly asking because we have a 7-year-old, Bubba's boy, and then mine is 6. Is that too young, or is it more teenagers?
No, man. It's a little bit of both. Yeah, some of the camps will go younger, but I think 6, 7, I think we do some stuff in there. And my boy's 9, and I brought him. We did one in Fayetteville about a month ago, and I brought my guy there. So, definitely young and old. We love it, man. It's good times.
All right, before we let you go, I've got one tough question for you. I know what you're going to say to this. Who's winning the Army-Navy game this year?
Come on, man. We're back, baby. We're back. This 14 years straight of Navy dominating us. Forget it, man. We're back. We are on a run. And come on, that's not even – I'm insulted by your question.
I was about to say, do you really think he's going to choose the middies?
No, I knew he's going to. That's why I said I knew he's going to play Army all the
time. I know.
Go Army, right? All right, Chris. Where can people find you? I know we talked about it at the beginning of the interview, but I know SiriusXM. And are you still doing stuff with The Athletic? I love that publication.
Yeah. It's still write some stuff there from time to time. I'll throw it out on Twitter when I do that. On Instagram as well, and then. Get started. I'll be doing games this year for ESPN. I'll be doing a lot of different games early. Like I said, I'll be at the Battle for Atlantis, and then I'm doing a Big Monday again in the Big 12. So folks can catch me throughout the year, man.
All right. Appreciate the time, and definitely we'll look forward to having you. Maybe we can have you back on maybe around the time of conference play, but appreciate the time and the visit once again.
No doubt, guys. Look forward to it, and all the best.
Thank you so much, Chris. Speaking of two stand-up guys, a guy that went to West Point, so he's always very opinionated, but we like that about him, and very intelligent. You can't be dumb and go to West Point, right, Bubba?
Absolutely not, and that's one of those things that's very encouraging about some of the guys that Mike Houston and his staff are getting commitments from, because a lot of these guys, and I mean quite a few, have offers from at least one, if not multiple, academies.
No question about it. And, again, they take the creme de la creme, the cream of the crop, so to speak. So appreciate Chris, and appreciate Coach Houston getting all these great guys and great quality guys off the field and hopefully on the field with their play as well. Bubba, do you have anything before we go?
I really don't have anything. I'm just I think the one thing that I would say is we understand that we're very much in a building process right now in terms of football as well as men's basketball. But get out and support the Pirates, and we need all Pirates there, but especially those right there in the greater Greenville area that are within a 30 to 1 hour radius of Greenville. And get out and support the program when you can. Obviously, people have their lives to live, but get out there and do what you can to support the Pirates.
And also, fans, don't forget of this podcast that we'll have our playback. We'll be on this weekend, but we'll have our preview, I was going to say, on Thursday. We'll have that out in the next couple of days. We're working on right that, and we'll have that out for you. But unfortunately, Kyle is at work. He couldn't make the podcast, so I want to mention that. He's like a brother to us, and I hate he couldn't be here, but Kyle from LaGrange is always a big part of the show. Want to give a shout-out to Brennan Shapiro, who's been going to all the press conferences as we release this podcast. He's there right now. And practice as well. Appreciate you, Brennan. He's a fan. He was a fan of the podcast and then now working on the podcast, so appreciate that very much. All right, until next time, for Bubba Rosenbaum, our great guest, we had Rennie Angolia from ESPN and Chris Vitola from ESPN. I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.